Welcome to this edition of Kamau and the Community Coalition segment, First Five Humboldt and the Road to Resilience Project.
So my name's Heidi O'Hannon, and I work with First Five Humboldt. I'm currently coordinating a grant called the Road to Resilience Project. But yeah, I will pass it on to Ashley.
Hello, my name is Ashley Villa-Gomez. I am Yokeo Pomo from Ukiah. I have worked at UIHS for 2 years as a maternal child health DHR, and now I'm working on the Road to Resilience grant with Heidi and some other colleagues. I started as a medical assistant, a phlebotomist, but since working at United Indian Health, I have broadened my education, and I'm honored to say that I am a childbirth educator, a birth doula, and an innate postpartum care provider.
Okay, well, we have Ashley on the phone. Could we talk about other services outside of Road to Resilience that United Indian Health Services offers families?
Yes, I would love to. So United Indian Health offers a few different programs that support families. And one of my favorites is Strong Family, Kika Nechu. And it is a parenting support group. They offer traditional-based parenting education, one-on-one home visiting, and now during COVID, we're doing virtual groups twice a month. And it's the second Tuesday and the fourth Tuesday at 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. And what I love about this program is that it is client-led. So the topics that we go over in the virtual group are topics that are suggested by our clients, which is great. So it's always relevant. And the idea is that we kind of guide the conversation, but we really hope that the clients jump in and support each other and offer knowledge to other clients that are in our group, which is great. We also have a car seat program, and it is by donation. So we offer, or we ask for a $15 donation, but, you know, as our children grow and get older and the regulations on car seats change, we can offer those different sizes for families, which is great. And then in the summer, we also offer bike helmets and life jackets for our kids to be safe while they're up and down the river.
And those are available to throughout the county?
Yes. So at all of our UIHS locations, you can contact your local CHR. So Witchpack, Smith River, Elk Valley, Crescent City, Klamath, and Pottawatt as well. And we do serve Fortuna areas as well. So you would just contact someone at Pottawatt Health Village to get a CHR to help you get enrolled or to help get a car seat.
I want to go back to the Zoom call. I did notice my mic was down, so you didn't hear me. I was going to ask a question. About how many people, on average, do you get on these Zoom calls?
I think it varies. It varies on topic. And, you know, right now there's a lot of Zoom calls for our kids and school, so it's kind of based on when people can attend. But I would say an average about five families for sure, a virtual group.
And when you, how do you facilitate the opening of that Zoom call? You've got a topic, so everybody's going to be addressing this topic?
Yes. So just this last one, the topic was story time. So beforehand, coloring pages were sent out to the kids so that they could color. Some books were also sent out to the families so that they could follow along during story time. The book was We Are Water Protectors, which is a beautiful book. And then during the virtual group, we go over the book and have any question, you know, answer any questions and see what the kids enjoyed about the story and the characters.
All right. I was interested in that because we like to do some Zoom calls and start doing some of that type of work of connecting with community about what we do at the radio station. And I love that.
It's a great way to connect during this COVID time.
Yeah, I'm trying to take advantage of this whole situation because it gives us a completely different way of communicating with people. And to what we normally do at radio stations, we broadcast. That's not really communications because we're sending out information, but we're not getting any responses. We're not listening to people. But yeah. These Zoom presentations opens the door. So working on facilitating this session, so there is a topic that we want to focus on, and we may have, I don't know, 20 people, as many as you have, but I want to know what it is up front that they want to get out of this session.
Yeah.
And then go around to everybody so they can introduce themselves so we all know who's on this call and how are they?
So helpful right now to stay connected, and especially Zoom is a great platform because you can see them virtually, see their expressions. You still have that connection in a different way. We just have to get a little creative with what that looks like. But we've really utilized that, which has been a great way to stay close with our families.
Do you also use the share screen where you can do the presentation on your screen?
Yes. Yeah. We have a great public health nurse, Diane Keene. She's up in Elk Valley, and she's been doing some great presentations for the families, like on emotional intelligence. And just different topics that they were interested in.
Oh, good. That gives me a bigger picture in my mind of what your services that you provide. That's very good. Thank you. Was there something else you'd like to add to that? Did you actually answer the question, what kind of special support do you provide to families?
I think I answered the question.
Okay.
And then, I guess, would it be worth it, Ashley, to just, do you think that it's generally understood that folks up in the Hoopa Valley would be eligible to services at UIHS? Or is that something that should be, maybe just talk about general eligibility to UIHS? Would that be something to just quickly mention?
Well, we have the Kamau Medical Center.
Right.
But how do they run parallel services? I don't know.
Well, that's what I mean. So, because UIHS has so many services under one umbrella, behavioral health and all these different things, if somebody obviously is receiving services at Kamau but maybe needed additional support that wasn't available at Kamau but was available at UIHS, I wonder if it's generally understood that they could reach out to UIHS?
I think that's
support.
Yes. I would go that way because I do hear that some people do go to a Potawatomi. So yeah, maybe you could express that option.
If you would like, or if you're interested in any of these services that UIHS offers, you can always go to the Wichpec Clinic office in the UROC office and speak to the local CHR who can get you enrolled and hooked up with all of these services that we offer.
And how else? Could you also share your address and telephone number in Arcata?
Yes, definitely. So I am at Potawatomi Health Village. My phone number is 707-825-5070, 707-825-5070, and Yvonne Bones will transfer you to my desk. And I can get you all set up.
Well, very good. Well,
I did also want to mention our lovely WIC department. They do great things for our families. They also do a breastfeeding support group as well. I believe they do it at Kamau, or at least used to pre-COVID. But yes, they have some great resources, lactation consultants, and they're just a lovely group of people.
So here's a side question for you. At United Indian Health Services, Padua, or wherever the offices are, you're going to have a special Halloween type of drive-through kind of activity?
Oh, yes, we are. So we will be doing a trick-or-trunk, I believe it's what they're calling it. And on October the 29th, we will be stationed in the front of Potawatomi Village, and you can bring your children in their costumes, and we will be out front giving away pumpkins and candy and just kind of doing a little drop-by parade for the kids so that we can still, you know, support our children during Halloween and the festivities, but doing it in a socially distanced way.
And you're going to be taking photos and videos too, huh?
Yes, we are. And I will give you the time of that as well. I believe it is 1 to 4 on October 29th.
Okay, we're going to stay with the seasons then. Very good. Is there anything else you'd like to add to this?
That question? No, I think that was good on that question. Yeah.
All right. You're going to be on the phone for a while until you have to leave. So why don't we go back to Heidi and pick up some of the other questions. And if you have anything that you'd like to add, then you can always do that as well. Okay?
That sounds good.
All right. So Heidi, can we talk about let's talk about the description of your program first.
Okay. So Road to Resilience is a grant that was awarded to First Five Humboldt, and we are partnering with UIHS, or United Indian Health Services, and eventually Kamau Medical Center and the Karuk Medical Clinic as well. But right now, our partnership, the program or project is just starting in UIHS, so we're just getting that off the ground, and as we kind of get rolling there, then we will be moving into Kamau and Karuk. But the main goal of Road to Resilience is to place what they call perinatal healthcare navigators into these tribal medical clinics, specifically to work with women who are in their perinatal period, so meaning they are pregnant or they're parenting a child that is 1 year old or younger, and that they are also experiencing or at risk of experiencing substance use disorder. What these navigators do, and that I don't want to confuse anyone, because the grant language called them navigators, but like at UIHS, their title is a CHR, or a community healthcare representative. So you might hear both of those terms, but they are the same thing. Navigator, CHR, their function's the same. But so basically, these navigators are going to be working with families, like I said, who are pregnant or parenting and that are experiencing or at risk of experiencing substance use disorder. And when I say experiencing or at risk of, I really like to make folks understand that the way that we are determining that is you take a very, when you're meeting with a CHR for the first time or a navigator, you'll answer four simple questions, and it's basically, you know, have you ever experienced substance use in your life? Has your partner? Did your parents? Or did you experience it while you were pregnant? And if you answer yes to even just one of those questions, then you are then eligible to receive services from the navigator or from the Road to Resilience Project. And I, you know, just hearing those questions, I don't know very many people, myself included, who can't answer yes to at least one of those. So the nice thing is even if, you know, I want people to understand that even if you aren't currently, you know, in active addiction or feeling like you're really suffering from substance use, even if that was a component at some point in your life, you know, maybe a parent, you know, had
issues with alcohol or something, but it's not necessarily anything you're experiencing right then, but you have in the past, that all of that makes you eligible to receive services, because it's all relevant. It all creates stress. It all creates trauma that we kind of can carry with us. And so we want to make sure that services are available to people to try to help, lighten that load a little bit. So the other eligibility criteria is that you be eligible to services at UHS. So as long as you're eligible to services there, you're eligible to services at Road to Resilience. And once we have navigators placed at Kamau and Karup, the same will go, will be in effect there. So if you're eligible for services at those clinics, you'll then be eligible to Road to Resilience services. But once the other eligibility criteria is that you are either pregnant or parenting a child 1 year old or younger. But we also want families to understand that we can be kind of flexible. So if you have multiple children and you have one child that meets that age criteria, you would then be eligible, and your family as a whole would be eligible. So, we could serve your family as a whole. And there are, with Road to Resilience, we want to be very flexible in what we can help bring to families. But kind of the big picture of services is to help families connect to different community resources that will help them achieve goals and kind of find some peace. So when families, a lot of people probably understand this, but when families are experiencing crisis, have a lot of stress going on, whatever it might be, and you're trying to access services, so you're trying to make a doctor's appointment, or you're trying to, call housing and a housing resource and get some help there, even just get information, or you're trying to find services for substance use. You're interested in medicated assistant treatment, which we'll go over later, or rehab services, or whatever it might be. It can be really complicated. Sometimes it's hard to even talk to a human being when you're calling these places, and that can be really overwhelming when you're stressed, when you're trying to parent, you're trying to manage trauma, all these different things are going on for you and your family. And, even making that simple phone call to find a counselor or something can be really overwhelming. So finding transportation to get to and from these appointments, or figuring out how you're going to pay for some of these services if you don't, have resources already available. So these are things that the navigators will be helping folks with. So, not only just being a support themselves, so being able to just be somebody to kind of talk to, vent with, bounce ideas off of, but somebody who can help, make those phone calls and schedule these appointments and then keep those appointments, organized and remind the family. You have this appointment coming up tomorrow, and then the next day you have two other appointments. And then, taking them to those appointments, so providing that transportation to and from these appointments. In this community, we are fortunate to have public transportation, but I think most folks are aware that it can be difficult if public transportation is the only thing you're relying on to get to and from. We're a community that's spread out, especially out in the valley. It's really difficult to rely on public transportation to get down to the coast. So those types of things can make accessing resources really hard. So that's another big component of services that Road to Resilience is offering is, transportation, direct transportation to and from. So we're not, occasionally we can talk about gas cards and things like that, but that's not even necessarily what we're focusing on in terms of transportation. The navigators themselves will be able to take folks to and from these appointments, because I think it's important to also, it can be scary to show up to an appointment for a counselor for the first time. And so kind of having somebody with you can be really helpful. So So it adds that extra layer of support. We also, Road Resilience will, you know, help people connect with different parenting resources in the community. We have a lot, both tribal and non-tribal. So it's there can be a focus on whatever the parent is wanting. And also, you know, just if the, even if the family already has a plan. So, for example, say the family's already working with CWS and they have a plan in place with CWS that they're supposed to get done, but they don't really have the resources to get all of those things done because CWS usually writes out a case plan that includes different things that's supposed to help the family achieve goals. So, you know, parenting classes, maybe domestic violence support, maybe counseling, maybe substance abuse classes, you know, things like that. But then the family's left oftentimes saying, well, how do I get to these appointments? How do I, you know, I'm really stressed out. How do I keep all this stuff organized and in line and know where I'm supposed to be at what time and meet with who? So that's really where the navigator can step in and just kind of fill in those gaps and be that support to help that family achieve that case plan and their goals and things like that.
How many navigators are there going to be per site?
So right now at UIHS, we have 3 navigators. We have 2 at Potawatt and 1 up at Elk Valley. But that's where the navigators are currently working out of. But they will, you know, they can travel to different clinics, UIHS clinic sites as well. Ashley, did you have anything to add about that? Am I saying anything incorrect in terms of, you know, serving other clinic sites besides Potawatt and Elk Valley?
Oh, no, not at all. I do have something to add. Yes, so we have a health navigator, CHR, up in Elk Valley, and so she serves Crescent City and then Klamath also, and we have CHRs at each clinic, so they are also there to help support our clients and keep us all informed as well. So, and the same goes for WICHPEC. So we have a CHR in WICHPEC who will help us stay connected and informed with our clients there. And then we have our 2 CHRs in Potawatt.
I was thinking about the logistics when you start talking about providing transportation to services on the coast for us mm-hmm. inland. And if you have 1 navigator, then that leaves the desk open or vacant.
Yes, that is awesome. Is we all have work cell phones as well. So you can always get a hold of us via our cell phones when we're out of the office, which is great. And also, we all really want to work together. So if you know, I'm out of the office and another CHR is there, they will be there to support that client if, you know, in crisis or if needed in that moment.
Oh, good. Then I feel better about that. You thought about that already. That's good planning.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and, first I should say that when we've had initial conversations with Kamau staff, there would be, the plan is to have 2 navigators placed at Kamau. And because the transportation component can be larger because it's that trip, you know, out from the valley down to the coast, you know, that's something that will be a conversation that we'll address and make sure that, you know, we have, that there are navigators with that availability because it's such an important piece, you know. We want to make sure that transportation piece is we don't want that to be the reason that a family isn't able to access some sort of support or service, you know.
Yeah, I like that. I also like that service that you do to remind people of their appointments and well, that was tangible to the trips to the transportation. But I always thought that that would be a good business for somebody to just remind people of their appointments. You know, all of us people who direct programs, you know, we come up with all kinds of appointments and sometimes we miss them. And if we just had somebody who would give us a call, say, hey, you know, you got an appointment at 9 o'clock today. Yeah. What a service
I
that would
love
be.
To have, I need my own personal reminder on a daily basis. So that would be wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah. How much would you pay for that?
I know, right?
Can that be funded?
We should look into it. Well, maybe I'll put that on a to-do list down the road.
Yeah, what a great service. That would relieve a lot of stress.
It would.
there's an angle. Okay.
It is. Yeah. Well, and that's, you know, it's even more difficult on that note when you're juggling parenthood and, you know, maybe your family is going through some traumatic times and maybe you're experiencing substance use and, you know, all these different things. Being able to remember literally just one appointment when you're juggling all of those things, it's next to impossible, you know what I mean? And it's just so having that extra support, kind of that extra brain in a way, extra memory piece of somebody who can be like, hey, remember we have this appointment and I'm giving you a ride and I'll be there to hold your hand if you need, you know, because I know this is a lot of stress for you. So just kind of being that wraparound support person for families.
Yes, that, what a relief that would be.
Yeah.
We all need wraparounds, yeah.
Yes, I know. That's the thing. We all need this. So we're starting, you know, focusing on specific communities, but we will, maybe we can expand this on a broader scale at some point.
Here I go, making more work for you. All right.
I know. I appreciate it. It's good.
So now we talked about the services, the wraparound service as providing transportation and the outreach to get the Zoom calls going and making community engagement work through this pandemic time and that utilizing the technology that is available. So how about those people who don't have the technology to catch up? How are they picked up?
That's a really excellent question and point. So it's, you know, and it's really, it's been interesting trying to roll this program out during a worldwide pandemic, you know, a program that focuses on like human connectedness and human support of one another. And you know, that environment has changed dramatically since March. So obviously a lot of the services, based on families, you know, what families are comfortable with, we are still providing services and transportation and things like that to families. Obviously minding all of, you know, the public health guidelines and, social distancing rules, masking and all of that. But if family, you know, say a family's not comfortable with that, we are offering, you know, there's Zoom support and telehealth and things like that. But it does make it complicated if folks don't have that, you know, Wi-Fi access or access to tablets or other things. So one thing UIHS has, I believe, is it Strong Families that have done the tablet kind of loan program, Ashley?
Yes, it is Strong Families.
Okay. Yeah, so they, you know, they have, for families that may not have that access to those, to that level of technology, they do have tablets that they can loan out to families that are equipped with the necessary, well, are they equipped, does the family have to have access to Wi-Fi?
Yes, so we have Kindles available to be loaned out to people for Zooms and telehealth. They have cameras and a microphone, and we give out headphones with a microphone in them as well. They just have to have Wi-Fi to be able to connect. So if there is, you know, a location in your town that has available Wi-Fi, you can, you know, go there and use it. We can transport you there to use the tablet as well. But yeah, we're offering them to be loaned out, which has been awesome for a lot of families, you know, whose kids are Zooming homeschool, and then they have work. It's just a great resource.
Right. CHRs, Road to Resilience CHRs at UIHS, we'll make sure that, you know, we'll have those same resources available to families that be able to connect with their CHR. And then we, you know, I feel really fortunate to be working, you know, to kind of, UIHS set that example of making sure families have that, you know, resource for technology so that we can't, Road to Resilience and First Five can follow in those footsteps when we're working with Kamau and Karuk to make sure, you know, have that technology available to loan out to families and make sure that they have access to those resources. The technology, again, you know, like the transportation component, again, that not having access to technology does not get in the way of a family being able to access support and resources. So,
okay, so we've covered the transportation and the services, the overall services that are provided. Could we get into some other questions regarding, well, who are the clients? So what is prenatal substance use disorder? So
yeah, well, and this is a topic that I could go on and on about, so feel free to interrupt if needed with questions or clarification or anything. But you know, there is a lot of work being done in the community to educate folks on you know, substance use disorder as a whole, and substance use disorder being a disease and not something, not like an ethical, you know, somebody being without morals, or you know, that's kind of, historically, substance use disorder has that's kind of been the thought process around it. It's just, you know, these people are bad people, or they're using drugs and things like that. And there luckily there's a lot of work being done and a lot of wonderful steps being made in our community and elsewhere about educating folks and reducing that stigma that this is a disease, and really what it comes down to is it's a trauma response. So when somebody experiences trauma, whether it be when they're a kid, you know, an adolescent, an adult, and it could be, you know, they had abusive parents when they were kiddos, both emotionally and physically, or they had a really bad car accident as an adult, and it left them with an ongoing back injury. You know, trauma and things like that can come in many different forms. But the idea is that when those things happen, it literally changes our brain, and it can change our brain forever. And those changes aren't irreversible, but it takes a lot of work to address those changes. And so, you know, for example, if you experience chronic abuse as a child, or chronic, you know, trauma and stress as a child, I have to say I'm not an expert, but I've gathered a lot of information around it, but it can literally change your brain to where everybody's heard about that whole fight or flight response. So like when, you know, the animal being chased by a lion and they flee and, you know, they go under a bunch of stress and all these stress hormones are released to their brain. Humans have those same stress responses. And when you're under, you know, experience trauma, your brain goes into those fight or flight modes and just kind of stays there. And we're not meant to be in our fight or flight mode all the time. You know, that's not really where humans are meant to be. But those are just kind of the changes that chronic stress makes happen in us. And so it's really uncomfortable to be in that perma fight or flight mode. And unfortunately, drugs and alcohol really help that. You know, people use them for a reason, because they really do help minimize these negative things that happen to us when we've experienced trauma. They become really good tools for people. And I'm not saying that people should continue to use them as their tools. You know, I'm not saying that by any means. But we have to understand why people use them. You know, they do help. So what we want to do is we want to help people get rid of those tools, drugs and alcohol as a tool, because they work in the moment. They work to help alleviate those feelings of being uncomfortable. But the long-term effects are awful, right? You know, you end up, it's hard to have money to pay for drugs and alcohol. So, you know, sometimes folks get into, like, there's theft and there's, you know, violence and there's sadness and there's, you know, there's all these negative impacts that come along with substance use disorder. So we don't want people to have to use those tools. We want to support them and put other tools in their hands that are healthier. Because those tools exist. There are better tools out there. You just have to support the person in being able to learn how to use those things. And so that's why this work is really, really important. Like I said, with the whole tool analogy, that's really important for anybody experiencing substance use. But when we talk about perinatal substance use disorder, so, you know, women that are using during pregnancy, labor and delivery, and then that postpartum period, it gets a little more complicated because mom is under so much stress already. Her body's changing. Her hormones are changing. She's growing a human being. You know, those are all pretty, pretty big things for anyone. But if you're experiencing substance use disorder, obviously that it becomes really, really intense, a really intense experience. And in the past, you know, the way that we have treated this is if mom was using, a lot of times what can happen is it's determined to be a safety risk for the baby. So CWS steps in and can remove the baby from care. The baby's placed either with friends or family members or in a foster care setting. And, you know, it supports are offered to mom, but I think that as a community we can be better at wrapping around mom and really providing a stronger sense of support. Because like I said, you're already stressed because you've just, you know, you're either pregnant or parenting or just delivered a baby. And then if you're experiencing substance use and you're told that the tool that you've used for probably a long time to help make yourself more comfortable, so you've been using drugs and alcohol, but that's your number one tool and that's all you know to use. And then we take that away, but we've also maybe taken your baby away from you because you're considered to not be safe for your baby. Well, what motivation do you have to change at that point? You know, that it's very traumatic for a mom to be separated from her baby, whether she's using substances or not. So it seems to me really unfair to do that. And that's historically kind of how we've treated it. Luckily, there's been some amazing steps taken in this community. A program called Eat, Sleep, Console that's been implemented both at Mad River Hospital and St. Joe's, where we're no longer just going to that, let's take baby away, if baby was exposed to substances prenatally, we used to, you know, remove the baby, put the baby in NICU, and give the baby meds. So mom and baby weren't really together a lot. And with Eat, Sleep, Console, it's focusing more on, no, let's keep mom and baby together. Let's strengthen that bond. Let's let mom be baby medicine to baby and vice versa, because keeping that emotional bond intact is probably one of the most, that's probably one of the strongest bonds in nature. And so let's keep that intact and build on that, you know. There's this wonderful example. This is not my analogy, but I've heard this analogy, and I just love it. So if a mom has diabetes, whether it be she had diabetes before she got pregnant or she developed it during pregnancy called gestational diabetes, which is fairly common. So mom has diabetes, and, you know, her OBGYN is totally aware of it, and she's receiving regular prenatal care, and her doctor is giving her lots of support around the diabetes. So helping her with diet tips and exercise, you know, implementing an exercise routine. Maybe there's meds involved, things like that. But mom has a bad 2 weeks, and she goes off of her diet, and she eats a lot of carbs. So that's dangerous for her and the baby, you know, as are, you know, using substances while pregnant. But eating carbs when you're diabetic can be dangerous for you and the baby. But we don't, when if mom does that, we don't remove the baby from her care at that point. What we do is go all hands on deck and get many more supports in place to see what we can do to help her. We see, that diet didn't work for you. Like, what can we do to make this diet doable for you? What other kinds of physical activities would you like to do that we could help you get started that would help, you know, regulate your blood sugars? Would counseling be helpful for you? You know, we do things like that to help mom support her in this diabetes journey that she's on to help protect her and baby. So why aren't we, you know, we wonder, well, why aren't we kind of implementing these same strategies when it comes to mom who is experiencing substance use disorder? Instead of, you know, kind of removing baby from her care and sending mom on her way, why aren't we wrapping around that family as a whole and seeing what kind of supports we can put in to help mom develop these new tools to, you know, so that she's not having to rely on substances anymore? So, and I love that analogy because it normalizes. Substance use disorder is a disease. It's something that needs treatment. It needs support. The recovery is absolutely possible. It just, you have to provide support and real support. You can't tell somebody, well, just stop using. That's not reasonable. And if it was as simple as that, this wouldn't be an issue. We wouldn't be having this conversation. You really have to get a wide spectrum of supports in place for mom, for the baby, and for the family as a whole.
So you have to take a look at the root cause of the person's situation.
100% you do.
So that's going to take a lot of time and effort, and actually it takes counseling.
Yeah, and you're right, and you know, you bring up an excellent point that this is not, I'm not saying that this isn't an easy process, or that this is an easy process. It's complicated, and it's intense. And I don't in any way, I also am not suggesting in any way that mom using while pregnant or, you know, parenting, there is a safety risk for baby because unfortunately the symptoms of substance use can make it to where it's an unsafe environment for baby. So we don't want that, but we just have to be more reasonable about what it takes to support mom. It's, you know, she's likely using kind of just like you said, because of some really intense trauma that she experienced, maybe even as young as, you know, 6 months old. Or it could have been a lifetime of trauma that she's experienced. That's why she's using. So we do have to go back and treat those, you know, really those effects that have been in place for a really long time. And so it is really complicated. But it can be done. And it's just a matter of bringing in these supports and addressing, you know, having these conversations about it, not saying, well, just stop using, you know, stop drinking. Those types of ideas are just not helpful anymore.
The old bumper stickers type of thing.
Yeah, right. You know, it's too simplified. It has to go a lot deeper than that. When we're talking about really helping people move towards recovery.
I think that also the stigma of reaching out to a person for counseling is
absolutely
in the way. We just have this thing in our mind. So what's wrong with you?
When we're talking about the moms, pregnant moms or moms with young children, everybody's afraid to reach out and say, hey, I've been using heroin for 20 years and I really need help. Most folks are pretty afraid to reach out for help and say that. But what if you're pregnant or you have young children? you're terrified to say that. You're terrified to even go to the doctor to get prenatal care, first of all. And you're terrified that CWS is going to be called on you and your child's going to be removed from your care. And that's one of the biggest problems. So, you know, doing work around getting the stigma reduced and not having folks' reaction to be automatically, you know, thinking mom and baby need to be separated, that's really going to be really important work, because people have to be, women have to feel safe even reaching out for help. And at this time, it's not uncommon for somebody to not feel safe. You know, it's just, that's just how it is. People are really fearful. And I have to say, for good reason. They're fearful for a good reason.
Yeah, you can lose not your family members. You lose your job. You can lose, there's so much mm-hmm. to lose in this world.
It's true.
And it's so hard to get it back.
It is. It's really hard, and there aren't, and I think another component to it is that, you know, for our tribal communities, when folks, so say mom even, you know, maybe she's connected to resources to help address the substance use, but it's, you know, a lot of the resources out there are kind of a one-size-fits-all, so there's not that, There's been a ton of research done on recovery success and cultural connectedness. So having a strong connection with either culture or just, you know, family tradition or you know, a faith of some sort, it's really, they've done a lot of research that it's really important when it comes to recovery, and those things aren't really necessarily emphasized in some recovery platforms, not all, but even beyond the recovery support, just when working with working with maybe a social worker or case manager or something like that, there's not always kind of that emphasis to help families get reconnected. And so, you know, taking into consideration things like that, these are the types of tools that we're talking about that we want to put back into people's hands when we're removing those substances as their tool. So we want to put things like spirituality and cultural and family connectedness. We want to put those types of things back into the hands of folks to have in their toolkit rather than substances. Having focuses like that is really important. And we're moving in the right direction, but there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. But I will say we're a small rural community, Humboldt County, and there is some amazing work and amazing folks doing work for how small we are. I feel like our community is doing an excellent job at trying to get this work rolled out, you know.
Yeah, I remember when First Five of Humboldt started. It was, wow, back in the 80s, I believe.
Been a while.
Yeah, and I always thought, wow, this is a great organization and a great effort. I think it was funded through the tobacco.
Yep.
What do you call it?
The tobacco town, yeah. And we, you know, First Five, I wanted to mention, so we, unfortunately, you know, one of our primary supports for families was our play groups, which COVID has changed quite a bit. you know, just the nature of play groups, we can't safely be done under the COVID environment. But we are doing these distribution packets out to families. And so for the Hoopa Valley, we're out there on the fourth Wednesday of every month from 10 to 2 at the grocery store. And so the next time we'll be out there is October 28th. But what we're doing is handing out packets that have, information sources for parents and for the kiddos. They'll have books in them, some hand sanitizer, just little things like that. And it's an opportunity to talk with somebody. You know, a First Five staff member will be out there. So if families have any questions about, you know, resources, if they're looking for any, it's a good time to be able to talk with somebody from First Five. So I just kind of wanted to mention that.
And when will that be, you said?
So the next, we're doing it the fourth Wednesday of the month from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. So for the Hoopa Valley, the next time we'll be out there is October 28th, which will be next Wednesday.
Okay. Wonder if there's any way I can do an interview with that person. Just thinking off the top of my head right now.
If that's something you're interested in, just let me know. I can talk with.
Yeah, just a little short insight on services available and reactions. What's the experience like? That type of a thing.
Yeah, that would be great.
I didn't mean to sidetrack you, but
no, not at all. Not at all. I feel like I've been rambling a lot, so I hope
you gave us some great information.
There's some
great insight.
In there.
Yes,
that's good information. I do need to pop off.
Okay. Here. Thank you so much for your time, Ashley.
Yes, Ashley, thank you very much. I thank you for all your good work and everything that you're providing for our community. Yes.
Thank you. The community means so much to me. And I truly believe that when you take care of and nurture mothers and support the mother-baby relationship, you're also upholding the health of the community. It's all connected. So, yes, I feel honored to do this work, and thank you so much.
Take care.
Okay.
So we're talking about First Five of Humboldt and the services mm-hmm. that you're providing. And that during a pandemic and all, there's you can't do that. That First Five events that you're having in Orleans.
It makes it tough, but I think the most important thing is that we are continuing the conversation and figuring out how to still support and serve families, but under this very brand new and different environment, you know, that's been, that we're all kind of faced with. It's hard because we very much are aware of the fact that, you know, arguably more than any time in our, in recent history anyways, families need support, you know. So it's real. We're really trying to be mindful of that, and trying to get as many supports out to families as we can, but in a safe way. So right now, those distribution packets is one of our primary things that we're doing, and we're hoping that it's at least providing folks with, you know, a moment with a First Five staff member to connect if needed, or at least just, you know, right now a new book can be really exciting. You know, those just aren't things that we really have the luxury or easy access to like we've had in the past. And so we're hoping just providing, you know, little things like that and letting families know we're still here. We're thinking of you. We're finding ways to get, you know, First Five's still here. We're still trying to find ways to get that support out to folks.
Well, yeah, that's really important to make those connections with the community. And we got our public radio station here.
Right.
If there's some way that we could team up together to make people aware and continually, you know, on an ongoing basis, it doesn't have to be every day, but... we do run the public service announcements when you have events, but it would also be, I would encourage there some kind of a, just like what we're doing right now, we're explaining the service.
Yeah.
Maybe we can make it a more of a human interest type of a thing where we actually, talk about the experience that you have, your clients have, thinking in a production mode here.
No, I love that. Yeah, I think that sounds like a really good. Yeah, well, on.
So you're getting testimonials from the people that you're working with.
Yeah.
And
from families themselves.
Yeah, families themselves, and maybe they somebody else in the community will hear somebody that they know.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, "Wow, we have never talked about that. I didn't know that."
Yeah.
So that might be able to help. And that's pick up one more person. That'd be good.
Yeah. What better reason right now than to, when families, like, you know, this is their primary resource of connection is radio, a way that we can make a connection because we can't do it in person right now. So we need to be creative.
Yeah.
And that would be a way to do that.
And those people who don't have internet and Wi-Fi's and Facebook, well, what they have is this radio station.
Exactly. That sounds great.
Yeah, we just like to have local content. And you know, we get things from in the country, but they're not produced here, and they're not talking about us in Humboldt.
Yeah.
So we need more perspectives from this community and Eastern Humboldt and Humboldt in general.
Yeah.
KHSU is no longer operating locally. So,
I know.
So that's a void.
It is. So all the more reason, let's do this. Yeah, no, I love this idea, Joseph. I think, and I appreciate you bringing it up. I feel like I'm excited.
Good. That's
yeah.
What it takes to get things started. Yeah,
I know. And I think I love the, I don't know. It sounds really exciting to do, like, it would be really cool, but also just kind of the reasoning behind it. It's just, it's a really good way to reach out and be available to families.
So is there something in regards to this interview that you wanted to finish up?
I guess, one other thing I guess I would like to mention is that we are, Road to Resilience, another thing that the project as a whole, besides providing these healthcare navigators to the different clinic sites, providing training and messaging around reducing stigma for substance use disorder is another pretty, big component of the Road to Resilience project. So we will be doing some trainings. I've connected with Rhonda Tripp out at Kamau with a upcoming training opportunity that I'm working on. I don't have any dates or anything set for it, but it's going to be around working with moms and infants where there's substance use disorder or substance exposure and how to support them best. So we're working on that, and we want to bring that to Humboldt County and to the Hoopa Valley. We want to bring it to the community as a whole. So I just want to kind of put that out there that I will be really mindful to make sure that the information gets spread out to everyone, so that folks that want to attend have the information and are able to. The main point is we want to provide trainings and make sure that they are available to everybody in our community. So folks to just be kind of keeping their ears and eyes open for that information as it comes out, if people are interested. And if anybody, if the Road to Resilience services sounded interesting or think they may benefit from those services, reaching out to UIHS, or if they aren't able to reach out to UIHS, they can always contact me, and I can get them connected with the right person. So just want to make that known as well.
And your connection numbers?
First Five Humboldt phone number is 707-445-7389. 707-445-7389. If I don't answer, if you just ask for Heidi, somebody will get you connected to me as soon as possible. So, yeah, like I said, I hope that the information is like coherent and understandable, and that people find some sort of value in it.
You have been listening to the Kamau and Community Coalition presentation of services available to our community. The lead producer is Rhonda Tripp, BSW Coalition Coordinator. The audio producer, host, and engineer is Joseph Orozco. This program was produced in the KIDE Studio 91, Hoopa, California. Thank you for listening.